I think today we're going to start a topic that to me is exciting. Minor prophets. Why are they called minor prophets?
The books were short.
The books were short. You know, we think major prophets and minor prophets, and but it's nothing to do with anything more than their books were short. And it's interesting to think about some of the events in their lives. And I wanted to read to you the beginning of the quarterly. The mind, someone says, is never satisfied. Never. That's because it faces a cruel paradox. The mind which can contemplate the eternal is composed of matter that isn't eternal. And worst of all, the mind knows that it is not eternal. Like a chicken and oyster, we are going to die. The difference, however, is that the chicken and oysters don't know it. We do. And that realization causes us a great deal of anguish and suffering. How did we get into the mess? The answer is, of course, one word, sin. Sin leads to death. Humans sin, therefore, humans die. It doesn't get simpler than that. Therefore, just as sin came into the world through one man, and death came through sin, and so death spread to all because all have sinned. Yes, humans die, and here's the rub. We were never supposed to. You know, I think that's just such a powerful thing. We were never meant for what we're experiencing. But through our collective choice and choices we continue to have these kind of experiences. We were originally created for eternal life. The plan from the start was that we would live forever. Death, then, is an intruder, the most unnatural of all acts. We're so used to death that we take it for granted. We just accept it as a part of life. Death is part of life. If that sounds absurd and paradoxical, it is, because it is. Death is the negation of life, not some aspect of it. In this context, we come to this quarter's lessons. Perhaps it can best be expressed by the famous quote, and Ellen G. White writes that the great theme of the Bible is, the work of God is in laying the glory of man in the dust and doing for man that which he is not in power to do for himself. I think that is one of the most powerful things that we keep in front of us. And I think that is really what knowing God's ministry is about, is understanding how much God loves us. And this is going to be an unusual lesson today when we talk about Hosea. How many of you think have had the experience of doing something you believe God called you to do? How did you know that?
A strong desire to do the
item. A strong desire to do it, okay? So there's been a strong desire. Go ahead.
It's kind of a thing, if you don't do it, it keeps coming back to you.
Okay, that's an interesting point. It keeps coming back to you. It's like it just, you're on a merry-go-round. You come back around and around and around.
Sometimes it's seeing God's providential doors opening.
Okay.
Where it didn't seem like any way possible.
Okay. Now, if we had... Go ahead.
Sometimes I think if you pray and then stop and listen, it's what comes into your mind.
Okay. Be still and know that I am God, huh? So what's coming to your mind?
To me, it's also something that's spontaneously like that. You know, that's what you mentioned.
Okay.
It's just a spontaneous act on your part. But
so
when you look back, then you know that was
God leading, okay? So sometimes it's hard to know at the moment, isn't it? We may have strong impressions. We may have strong desires. Now, if one of the church elders came in and said to you, I've been told by God to go marry a prostitute, what would we say? Excuse me? We wondered about you all along. In fact, you barely made the boat. We're not sure. We've got to recount our votes. But you know what? If it's about a man being told to marry a prostitute, then we miss the story. We miss the story at all. It's not about that. But let's read the story a little here. In Hosea chapter 1, verse 1. The word of the Lord which came to Hosea the son of Beriah during the days of Uzzah, Jotham, Asa, and Hezekiah, king of Judah, and during the king's days of Jeroboam, the son of Josh, king of Israel. What they're really giving you is, and if you went and read up these books in First and Second Kings, this was a tumultuous time period. This is when the children of Israel were just before they were becoming going to be taken captive. So all of, I went and read up some about these different kings and what was happening. It was atrocious. We question our government at times. This was just corruption, corruption. In fact, if we went to chapter 4, verse 1, just for a second, then listen to the word of the Lord, O sons of Israel, for the Lord has a case against the inhabitants of the land, because there's no faithfulness or kindness or knowledge of God in the land. That was the condition that Hosea lived in. There was no knowledge of God in the land. So, we go back to verse 2 here. When the Lord first spoke to Hosea, the Lord said to Hosea, go and take yourself a wife of harlotry and have children of harlotry, for the land commits flagrant harlotry, forsaking the Lord. So he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, whatever, and she conceived and bore him a son. Now, he followed God's instructions. We go on down, and he talks about the name. Then in verse 6, then she conceived again and gave birth to a daughter. Now, it didn't say that it was gave birth to his daughter. We don't know. We don't know. And then when she conceived and gave birth to a son, she then gave birth to another son. So far, what's the story about? Hosea following God's instructions. Hosea looking to understand what God's instructions were. Has this happened before? Absolutely. Abraham, what was he instructed to do? Oh, take your only son that you waited for all of your life, and we're going to go and sacrifice him. What was that about? Plan of salvation. Did Abraham know that? Sure, he didn't.
And provided Abraham lived an experience that was very equal to what God went through in giving his son.
It opened Abraham to the mind of God. Isn't that what each of us wants to experience? Each of us wants to have a mind that's open to understanding God. Hello, come on in. Abraham, through that experience, was open to things, and it was quite a contrast from where he was when he was told he was going to have a son and there'd be his descendants would be like the stars, to that moment. You look at the progression of Abraham. So this wasn't unheard of, having things that were confusing. Go ahead.
I think that God is always trying to expand that trust, and yet so many times we think that God is going to work in conventional ways that are in harmony with man's conventional thinking.
Absolutely.
But here, Hosea living, mm-hmm. immoral. Abraham's asked to sacrifice his only son. So there's things that God comes to us with that tax. God created the world in 6 days. It's always taxing the conventional wisdom. I don't care how smart we may think we are. There comes that faith factor that just shall live by faith.
It taxes because we were never meant for the existence we're experiencing. We were meant to be immortal, but we live in mortality. We live in a finite world. And you're exactly right. It does tax. It does create us to create new images, new understandings of God. And sometimes that's uncomfortable. If you haven't heard the speaker today, you need to listen to him at the third service. That was a terrific example of what happens to you when you follow Jesus. What happens to you when you follow Jesus? Why doesn't he come and do it the conventional way? Not to steal the thunder if you haven't heard it, but the sermon, one thing he said is that Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, what was their prayer? To save us from the fire. But what did he do? Saved them in the fire. He saved them in the fire. In the fire, they had an experience that they would have never had if he saved them from the fire. They got to see Jesus. Wow. Sometimes we keep praying to save us from the fire, Lord. When maybe in the fire, we're going to have an experience that we would have never had.
Make it not a strange thing, the fiery trial.
Absolutely. But oh, as a therapist that works with people in counseling, that they come to me and they say, oh, but this is so awful, this is so terrible. And my response is, well, let's see what you can learn from it. The beauty of being a therapist that's been in one area and one place for years is people come back later. Had a woman come back yesterday that I had this long history with. Comes her a couple times, we have some good experiences, then she goes forward, which is great. That's not my job. My job's not to have them come see me. My job is to stimulate them. And we were talking about her life and her conditions and what she's thinking about doing with her life. And I said to her, and she talked about her first divorce, that her parents didn't talk to her for a year because as a good Catholic, her parents said to you've gone against the family tradition, and for a year her parents didn't talk to her. Well, obviously she's thinking about that place where she's kind of at that place. She says, I don't want that. And we talked about that for a moment. And then I said to her, you've rejected Catholicism, but in your mind, you haven't given up the thing of you should do it a certain way. And she smiled, she says, I think I've been enculturated with it. Because her big focus is, this shouldn't be this way. I should be able to make it work. I should be able to do this. I said, that's the whole system. You grew up in a Catholicism, but you're still hanging on to it in your psychological makeup. She doesn't go to church. She doesn't have anything to do with Catholic. She doesn't have to do with religion in general. But she's still haunted by that. And I think that's the interesting thing, is how we still can be haunted by things. So Hosea, he's told to do this. And then we look... and we get the understanding that his wife is gone, that she's gone back to her harlot, her prostitution, her selling herself, and he's no longer have anything to do with her. But then another event occurs. Another event occurs. Chapter 3. And if you have any different interpretations of some of these words, I want to hear them because it's fascinating. Then the Lord said to me, go again, love a woman who is loved by her husband, yet an adulteress, even as the Lord loves the son of Israel, though they turn to other gods and love raisin cakes. Now this tells you a little about the condition of Israel. They were doing all kinds of things. Ridiculous things. What are some of your interpretations you have in that first verse?
Their words have advanced.
Okay.
Go find your wife and tell her you still love her, even though she has left you and has had many lovers. Show her that you love her just as I love the people of Israel, even though they have gone after fertility gods and sit in front of them, eating the delicate raisin cakes they make for them.
Okay. Anybody else have anything different in your interpretation? I think it's good to get a collective understanding of how this is presented.
The New King James.
Uh-huh.
The Lord said to me, go again, love a woman who is loved by a lover and is committing adultery, just like the love of the Lord to the children of Israel who look to other gods and love the raisin cakes of the pagans.
Okay. So, told to go and to, what's the key word? Love her. This shows Hosea loved her. He didn't say go and take her. He didn't say go and rescue her. Go and love her. What a powerful message. Go and love her. So I bought her for myself for 15 shekels of silver and a homer and a half of a barley. He had to buy his wife. What was he buying?
He was buying disrespect of your community for himself.
Yeah. Can you imagine where he had to go find her? Imagine if some church folks saw them wandering into that place. Oh, whoa, what's going on with our elder here? Our prophet. He's gone into some shady places here. We're not sure about him. We need to have a church meeting about it. He's over in the red light district. He's gone astray. Oh, can you imagine the gossip that would have been there? Gossip can kill a church. Gossip can kill people. Go ahead. Again. So it replies he loved her and go show it again.
Hope.
Absolutely hope there wasn't there. He had to pay her because she was a slave. She was considered a slave. She was considered a slave.
So did he pay her or did he pay off the person that had the better at the point? And did I pay the man?
Paid the man. He had to pay the man. Go ahead, you were going to say something?
It's interesting to me how God took a simple man, a prophet, who all knew he was a prophet, but this experience that he puts Hosea in, it's going to influence a whole nation.
Uh-huh.
You know, I look at things like that and I think about how God works in mysterious ways. I think we have to confess to that because this is certainly 100% out of character.
100% out of character and 100% of not how we, in our minds, as he was saying earlier, imagine God doing it. But you're right. God works in mysterious ways because he wants us to get out of the mindset that we've got him all figured out. The more we think we have got God figured out and we understand it, and now we've got the right to be God's ambassador because we know the truth, I think we're the farthest from the truth. The farthest from it. So I think this is a message to us to realize, you know, you think about very practical terms. He had to go find her and show her he loved her again. I like the way NIV does it. But the process of going to find her might have been even risky. The process of doing it. Go ahead.
You know, that's the parallel that I think we shouldn't overlook. God tells him, go and find her. Not wait until she comes back. Not wait until, just like he's saying how he loves us, God himself goes to find us. He doesn't wait until we're...
We got all cleaned up and we're all ready and we've all expended everything. He is fine, looking for us every day. Absolutely. There's all kinds of risk. As a parent, haven't you done things for your children and taken the risk of being misunderstood? I mean, you think about it. I'll never forget I think it was my oldest daughter's 17th year. It was tumultuous. We had all kinds of things happening. And we were meeting with a counselor. Carol and I were meeting with another counselor with her. And we were talking about different things. And at one point we said, okay, if this is the life she chooses, if this is how she's going to live her life, we're going to sell her car because we paid half of it. We're going to give her half. We're going to keep our half and go live your life. That was our first instinct. Then after much talking with the counselor and talking among ourselves, we came back to, no, she hasn't finished high school. We want her to finish high school. So we said, okay, we're going to take your car. We're going to sell it. We're going to give you half. You can buy another car. We're going to give you half. And you can live here. And we'll accept you living here. But we're not going to come in at nights and have our usual time. We just kind of sit and share. Because you're choosing to be out of that. And my daughter made a dramatic experience. She broke up with that guy that we weren't thrilled about, that she was doing a lot of crazy things with. She was buying him stuff. She was doing all kinds of stuff. And later... You know, and at the time, it was just felt like gut-wrenching. It was gut-wrenching because we thought we were losing her. And that's always possible. It's always possible. But later, when we talked to her and as we processed it and we asked her, what happened that you decided to make that change? She said, I couldn't imagine going to sleep without you coming in and just talking with me like we've done all of our lives. Wow! Who knew that was going to be the key? You know, wasn't selling the car. I mean, we bought her. She paid half, we paid half. And it was a 1997 Honda Prelude. Really sporty little car. Pimped out little car. It was a great little car. It was exciting because we were excited we found it. And she was excited. And we wanted her to have it because she wanted a sports car. But it seemed like when she got what she wanted, everything fell apart. Isn't that the way we are at times? We get what we say we want, and what happens? Uh-oh, we don't know what to do with it. So we take the risk of being misunderstood. I often wonder what the counselor thought that we talked about, you know, because we were like, we just don't think we can live this experience. But then we got back to, she hasn't finished high school. We want to have her finish high school. And we will do this. Well, now, 11 years later, she's in a PhD program in Houston. But it became really clear. We want to make sure we believe in education, obviously, both of us having our PhDs. But more than that, we want her to experience success, and we do not think just saying to her, you know, can't live here anymore, because she was talking about moving in with this guy and all kinds of crazy things. But the reality was, we got clear. I think God is doing the same with us. His ultimate desire is for each one of us to be in heaven with Him. To know Him. And that's going to be eternity we spend doing that. But everything that happens to you is meant for Him, for you to get to know the mind of God. And oh, we know just so, we see the glass so darkly. So we pick up the story here, and he paid. Now, why didn't he go in there and just grab her and say, "She's my wife. I'll show you the legal papers. She's mine. You can't take her. You have no right to her." Why did he not do that? Absolutely.
She had been sold out.
So that's true. We don't.
We don't know what kind of bondage she had gotten herself in.
Absolutely.
And of course, the greater story is that this is, whole thing was an object lesson of the fact that we had to be bought.
Absolutely. 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 It's important to realize that their God never will force. And He will always work within whatever means He can to get us back into relationship, but it will never be out of a force. He could have, you know, he was saying, we don't know what the customs were. We don't know what the situation was. We can make the comparison to something in our world and understanding some of that world that there is. But He went and worked in the means that she was in. And it was custom to buy a slave. That's what he was buying, a slave. Buying her as a slave. Here, the woman he had children with, the woman he married, he was now buying as a slave. Then I said to her, "You shall stay with me for many days. You shall not play the harlot, nor shall you have a man. So I will also be toward you." Some of the rest, you read your chapter, verse 3. What is your version says? Verse 3.
"And I said to her, 'You must remain as mine for many days. You shall not play the whore. You shall not have intercourse with a man, nor I with you.'"
Okay. What is he doing by this? What is he establishing?
Equality.
Absolutely equality. He was wanting to establish equality. Legally, what should he have the right to do? Anything he wanted, because she was his slave. Anything he wanted, he had the right according to the rules at the time. But what did he say? "I'm going to leave you alone, and you're going to be here." How about some of the rest? Anybody else have any different versions of that? I like the way that said it very implicitly. Anything else that adds to our meaning? Chapter 3, verse 3. Absolutely.
We're always in that relationship.
And when He brings us back, how does He bring us back? Words of love, and He wants us to be His friend. He wants us to be in a connection, in a relationship of friendship. He wants to be known. What is, you know, the marriage relationship, he used a lot of symbolism throughout the Bible. I'm coming, the bride, you know, prepare. So he goes on. "For the sons of Israel will remain for many days without king or prince, without sacrifices or sacred pillar, and without ephod or household idols. Afterward, the son of Israel will return and seek the Lord their God and David their king, and they will come trembling to the Lord and to the goodness of his days. Hosea was given a little understanding of God's mind. He was given a little understanding of what that means. Hosea did and paid the price and then showed her he loved her. How did he show her? By saying, I'm going to respect you. I'm going to leave you alone. Other men are going to leave you alone. And you're going to decide what you want. You're going to make that decision. You're going to come to that decision. And wow, what a magnificent opportunity Hosea had to understand the mindset of God. But it also probably was very painful because, as you said in that version there, he loved her. You know, she probably wasn't in the best condition. Think of the prodigal son. What did the prodigal father do? He hugged him. He hugged his son. Did his son smell very good? Where he slept the night before, or however long? In the pig pen. He'd been walking with dirty clothes. Put a robe to cover him up. And he said, we're having a party. We're having a feast. Hosea. The difference of Hosea and the prodigal son was, we don't have any idea if Gomer was wanting this. We don't have a clue about that. We just hear how Hosea related to her. And that's why with any illustration, you have to make sure you don't try to take it too far. The main point is, this is God's demonstration of His love for you and me and all of His creatures. And it shows you how He deals with us. Shows you how He is constantly going to find ways to bring us back in connection with Him. And it may be in the fire. I keep praying sometimes from the fire, but it may be in the fire. And I think that's an important part of what we have to recognize. Most of the time, as Angela and any teacher can tell you, it's not when you know 1 plus 1 equals 2 that you learn. It's when you learn 1 plus 2 does not equal 4. Because why? You start to say, well, tell me, how did you come up with 4? Well, I 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. Oh, you didn't realize you had 1 and you had 2. Now let's put them together. Oh, you put them together? That's when learning takes place, is when we screw up. That's when there's the most dynamic experiences of coming to understand the mind of God. But those are the things that, rightfully so, we try to avoid. I mean, I'm not looking to find ways to create catastrophe for my life. I've done it at times. All of us have. But we don't recognize sometimes in those experiences what we have the opportunity to learn.
Sometimes only in the fire, that in our own human self-sufficiency, that we recognize our great need of God.
Absolutely.
I mean, the context of the whole history of nation of Israel at that time, that they were too well off. Mm-hmm. They were trusting too much. Mm-hmm. Riches and the materialism. As many times until we come to that place where we're in the fire, that we recognize our need of Jesus walking with us through.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about the children of Israel and their process. the miraculous things that led him out of Egypt into the promised land. And then they're thinking, oh, we can't go and get this promised land. These people are giants. How in the world could they say that? No different than you and I say it every day of our life. Well, God, you've been with me so far, but oh, you don't realize what this is. This is something different. This is something really big. This is something I think I've got to fix because I'm not sure I can trust in you. That's what's most interesting is, one of the things that I take from Hosea is God's really recognition of that this time period of this world, God is saying, I'm going to just let you wait and you're going to come to your own conclusions. He did tremendous amount of things that have been ridiculed and many people say, well, I don't think there's a God because why? How could a God do that? Because he did all the things he could to bring those children of Israel back to him. What were they supposed to be doing? What was their purpose? To witness to the surrounding nations. The promised land was the hub of every place, the world at that time. And they were supposed to be the nation that people came and says, what about you people is so exciting? Why do you people seem to live so well and be so happy? What is it about you? Tell me what you have. And they lost that. Just like all of us do. We all do. So now they were doing all and they'd embraced all the heathenism and all the... They forgot that I should not have any of the gods before me. But you know what's interesting is? We can learn lessons but forget about God. Because the very people that came out of all of these experiences and created this experience are the people that ended up rejecting the Son of God. They figured out how not to have any other gods before them. They figured out how many steps to walk on a Sabbath day. They figured out what to do and what not to do. They got it down because they went through and they had this collective suffering. I don't want to go through this again. They said, we've got to figure it out. We've got to make sure this never happens again. But they missed the most important thing, and that's understanding who God is and His love for them. If everything that happens to you in life, you miss that point, you are lost. Because that's the important part of this thing is Hosea's love for his wife. He wanted to go back and get her. And that's what God's doing today. He's wanting to bring each one of us to a relationship with Him. But unfortunately, we sometimes get focused on what we're supposed to do and what we're not supposed to do and what's the right thing to do. And we forget about God's love. And it's so fascinating. And I think that's the beauty of the Bible. You can read about these children of Israel and the miraculous things they had. And all of us said, well, if I could walk on water, if I had this, the Lake Arlington, divide and me walk through it and then water, I would believe in God. These people had it. They had it. And we have everything just like they did. We have things in our life that we can say, wow, look at how God was with me. But then it's so quickly we lose that when some panic happens, when something occurs that's out of what we're our comfort zone. And I think that's the most important thing. It's not necessarily figuring out how to make sure something doesn't ever happen again. It's making sure we understand who God is and how much He loves us and what He's doing to bring us all back to relationship with Him. Go ahead. Maybe she did.
So did not mind his reputation being at the drop of, people might say, going in places looking for her. But that's just how the love of God is. That, you know, sometimes we have members that might not come back to church for whatever reason, and you say, well, if they don't come back, I guess they're not interested. But you do not go the extra mile. You seek them.
Absolutely.
Because maybe if Jose had not gone to Gomer, she would be still there.
Absolutely.
So that's a lesson for us to learn. Even more, if we look at each one of another and going through difficult times, you just can't look at them, but we are the one that God uses.
Yes. Absolutely, we are. And this was really about understanding the mind of God. We don't hear Gomer's perspective. We don't hear how it came out. We don't have the, and it lived, they lived happily ever after. We don't hear that. And there's probably a good reason, because it's not about how that they lived happily ever after. It's about understanding the mind of God. And understanding what he is doing on a daily basis to reach out and to come bring us back into relationship with him. And who are we to decide how that should occur for someone else? Because boy, it can be really easy to sit there and say, well, blah, 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 you know? But that is not our business. I want to read this out of Prophets and Kings. In the days of apostasy in Judah and Israel, many were inquiring, wherewith shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before the high God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves of a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with the thousands of rams or with 10,000s of rivers of oil? The answer is plain and positive. He has showed thee, O man, what is good, and what doth the Lord require of thee, but to do justly, and to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God. In urging the value of practical godliness, the prophet was only repeating the counsels given Israel centuries before. Through Moses, as they were about to enter the promised land, the word of the Lord had been, and now, Israel, what doth the Lord thy require of thee, but to fear the Lord thy God, to walk in his ways, and to love him, and to serve the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul, to keep the commandments of the Lord and his statutes, which I command thee this day for thy good. This is from Deuteronomy. From age to age, these counsels were repeated by the servants of Jehovah. To those who are in danger of falling into habits of formalism and of forgetting to show mercy. When Christ himself, his earthly ministry, was approached by a lawyer with the question, Master, which is the greater commandment of the law? Jesus said to him, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like unto it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law of the prophets. These plain utterances of the prophets and of the Master himself should be received by us as the voice of God to every soul. We should lose no opportunity of performing deeds of mercy, of tender forethought, and Christian courtesy for the burdened and the oppressed. If we could do no more, we may speak words of courage and hope to those who are unacquainted with God, and those who can be approached most easily by the avenue of sympathy and love. What is the avenue and love, thank you. What is that experience? Isn't that what breaches you? When you're in a dark moment, somebody tell you messed up, or somebody said, wow, let's talk about it. I care for you. I'm interested in you. What can I do to help? Those are the words that God speaks to us all the time. And we, as representative of his love, have to be conscious of that's what our mission is. That's our purpose, is to know how to embrace those so we can create that experience of moments of saying, aha, now I understand how that Catholicism has affected me. Now I understand. Because when we have understanding, then we create all kinds of exciting possibilities. Hosea, I'm not sure I'd want to live his life experience, but I certainly think he created an experience of understanding God that he would have never had had he not gone through it. And he got to a place where he could really think. And think of how comforting it was, his words to the people. His writings. They could see. And that was the key, is they were meant to understand God and His love for them through Hosea's love for Gomer. And that's the most important thing we keep coming back to, is how God is working with each one of us to bring a connection with Him. Do you have any thoughts?
I think if we look at the Ten Commandments, that God wants us to understand Him as the source of love.
Absolutely.
In understanding that and accepting it and being a part of that love thing, then teaches us those other commandments.
Absolutely.
They become very natural.
Yeah, as Rob has said oftentimes, they're a revelation of how you become when you're in a relationship with God. They show the evidence of the love experience of God. We sometimes do like the children of Israel, and we want to put the evidence first and say, well, look, this proves it. Instead of, oh, let me tell you about my experience with God. That's a different experience. Shall we pray? Dear God, we're so grateful through the story of Hosea that we have a little understanding of your love for each one of us. Oh God, as a parent myself, I sometimes wonder how you can endure all of what you do. But then I realize that in my finite world, I have such a limited understanding. I'm so grateful you are a great God, that you are infinite, that you're the Alpha and the Omega. I trust in that. I'm grateful for that. May each one of us on this Sabbath day experience a recreation of ourselves so we come to understand your love even more. In Jesus' name, amen. Have a wonderful Sabbath day.